Business success usually comes to those who are too busy to be looking for it. Join RVK for the award-winning RV on Business Show every Tuesday at 12 midday. It's not about thinking out of the box. There is no box. Only on 101.9 Chai FM.
Welcome to 101.9 Chai FM. It is 9 minutes past 12. Thank you so much for joining us, as always. Just a heads up, next week is Pesach. I will not be doing a show on Chol HaMoed, so I will be seeing you in 2 weeks' time. Those are the intermediate days of Pesach, the Jewish holiday of Passover. So I will take a short break and will be with you the following week. But for those of you who remember, a few weeks ago, I did a detailed show on getting a mortgage for your property. And while we were discussing that, it came up that a home, the place where South Africans live, is often their most expensive asset that they have. It is the biggest item on their balance sheet. And a lot of people bought properties and thought they were very expensive. And as time went by, they were amazed at the asset growth of the properties that they had. Other people had just the opposite experience. They bought in what they thought was going to be a great area where they could bring up their children. And life happens, and horrible term, urban creep, sets in. And all of a sudden, you found yourself on the periphery and you need to move. And sometimes that move can cost you a lot of money because you just need to get out of the property. But there are always professionals, like in every industry. And I'm very happy to welcome Eva August, who's from Century 21 Properties. Eva, welcome to Chai FM.
Thank you, Abby. I'm very, very honored to be chatting to you today. Business with Abby.
Great. So nice to have you with us. You know, one thing, having been in that in your industry myself for a few years and lectured property at university at a high level for a couple of years, we all know that it's a science, but there's a lot of emotion that also goes into it. And often, you know, you get the expression, I didn't buy the house, I bought the view. Or I didn't buy the house, I just loved the swimming pool and we made everything else work. But before we get carried away by that, there obviously are certain telltale signs that a property is just not right. You know, where would you guide people? Well, let's take a couple in this case. They're looking at a property. What are the signs that would jump out at them and say, no matter how nice the area is, this property is not for you?
That is such an incredible question. And you really pre-framed it so well to talk about how our home is such an emotional buy. And for that reason, I always say, take your time. There's so many options in the marketplace. And the leaders in real estate that I learned from said, Eva, a great real estate deal comes along every single day. So telltale signs that a home is for you or not for you is, I will say as a preface, Avi, that there's no home that's going to tick 100% of the boxes. It should be like an 80-20 rule, and it should show you through your vision or the buyer through their vision that something's got the potential to be what you want it to be in time. I think what's important is to be really clear as to why we're buying property. Is it your primary residence for you and your family? If so, we want to look at structural concerns. We want to look at security in the area. We want to look at the neighborhood and development plans of the suburb, because you speak about urban creep. If the why is about investment and creating long-term legacy, which we do a lot of, with our clients, then it really is to look at the demand, the supply, and run the numbers. And that may be a completely different show. But the emotional side, I think, Avi, can be coupled with the logic of looking at a home as an investment. You said something that is true for most of us. Our home is the greatest investment we're going to make in our entire life. So structural things are a big thing. For me, the main thing is the property professional that you're dealing with able to provide you everything, all access, full disclosure, open books. If from the beginning that's not the case, I would pretty much not walk away, just take a step back.
You know, one of the biggest challenges that we have with properties, especially residential, when you buy them, is I've often heard people say, oh, I didn't see that. Oh, I was unaware of that. And how do you expect me to be a civil engineer, a waterproofing expert, a paint expert, a flooring expert? And a lot of those things should be, you know, just by the naked eye, looking at them, having an idea whether they look right or they smell right. But at what point does this footstoots clause walk in, where you say you're buying it, warts and all, whatever it is, you had a chance to look at it. But when the people move out and they move out their big pot plants and there's cracked tiles, or you cut a hedge and all of a sudden the wall's broken behind it, how does all that work?
Amazing question. So yeah, this gremlin of latent and patent defects, and truly we are buying what we see. I often encourage everyone. I've got family that recently bought property, and it's not unreasonable to say to the property professional or the homeowner, listen, can I just come by for a second viewing and come and walk through with a builder just to have a look at certain things and double check certain things? I think for property that is at fair market value, that has good bones and good structure, it's not unreasonable to ask that. That being said, there is a side of buyers using contractors to almost find faults and drive the property price in a different direction. So discernment is very important here. Dealing with someone that can navigate or mediate that for buyers and sellers, but it's not unreasonable. Can I bring someone in to look at the roof truss? It's looking a bit weak. Can I bring in someone to talk to me about if I will get approval by council to add a swimming pool and to add a cottage? It's really easy to do and easy not to do.
And really, that's it. At the end of the day, I suppose the buyer has the prerogative to do that, but it's the real estate professional who manages that process and is actually hired by the seller in South Africa in most of the cases, and should be able to guide them as to where there's a logical and a reason where there might be a case for a price change, or it's really just grasping at straws and trying to make a big difference. One of the biggest challenges we have in South Africa is that of building quality. On the whole, many, many years ago, when South African homes were built primarily by what we affectionately refer to as the continental builders, your Portuguese, your Italians, your Greeks, your Spaniards, where there was just a solid work ethic. They did the work themselves. Everything was supervised, to now using a lot more modern equipment, quicker building materials, and sometimes a builder having three or four jobs running at a time, and the supervision's not really there. Are we finding that, for example, surface cracks are just that? They're just surface cracks and not indicative of a bigger problem, and that these days you can simply patch it and move on? Or is that a reason for a buyer to really look a bit deeper?
I would say it's nothing to be alarmed by if you know that you're investing in an estate or in a home that's been built in the last 5 or 8 years. Anything older than a decade, I would definitely look at a bit deeper in terms of those cracks and those structures and those foundations. I think it's important to take that extra step. It's going to influence approvals. It's going to influence insurance approvals that are mandatory if you're getting a mortgage on your home, and your investment in the property that you may or may not have budgeted for. So I think the modern day off-plan sales in a development in a new estate, nothing to be concerned about. It is really just a snag or a growing pain. For the most part, in my personal experience, anything older than a decade and you're seeing the same sign, have a closer look. The thing is, I believe that the buyer has got so much option, and there's no such thing as only one property being my dream home and ticking all the boxes. And so I would always caution against rushing into something because you think this is the one, I have to have it. And to not also play into this scarcity language of you got to move quickly because it's going to go. I don't prescribe to that. I think that there's enough opportunity or enough sunshine for everyone. And not to let that emotion override what you're literally seeing in front of you as a latent and patent defect. And you're right. We don't build property the way we used to. It's almost like we don't raise animals for eating the way we used to. It's got to be quicker, faster, bring it to the market for more people now, now, now. It's not the same. Yeah, that's
it. Eva, thank you for that. We need to take a quick break and run to the shop. So when we come back, what I'd like to discuss with you is the associated costs that go into buying a property in a particular area. And there are many multifaceted. Let's take a quick break. We'll be back with you in a moment.
This is RV on Business.
With me is Eva August from Property 21. And Eva, the associated costs that come into buying a property, you know, having lived in South Africa all my life, then having immigrated to Israel, still owning property in South Africa, it's such a different world as to the way it works in different countries. You know, for example, just to put it out there, when you rent a place in Israel, the rates and taxes, electricity, water, gas, all that gets transferred into your name as the renter. So you are responsible. The landlord pays nothing.
Wow.
You pay everything and you pay your rent. And if you abscond without paying, it's not the landlord's problem because you, it was in your name when you were renting it. In South Africa, wow, it's just the other way around. And the person who's renting often just pays the utilities and the landlord pays the levies and things like that. So that's why it's so crucial for you when you're buying a property to understand what are the monthly costs. And Eva, while in South Africa, it's unique to the rest of, I suppose, the rest of the first world, is you have another layer of costs. You have security costs. In the Jewish areas stretching from Houghton to the other side of spot of Glen Hazel, you've got cap costs, you've got the security, armed response costs. These things come into play, and then you've got the maintenance of the infrastructure costs. What are the important costs generally that one needs to be aware of and that the estate agent or the property professional should really have at their fingertips when you ask the question?
Such an important question. I saw so many people making this mistake when our interest rates were the lowest in 50 years, 2020, 2021. And there are a number of associated holding costs, if I can say, whether you're renting or you're buying. It's not just the purchase price that you're looking at. And when you're renting, it's not just the rental price. While you say that tenants pay everything in other parts of the world, it's not the norm here yet, but it's slowly starting to become that, and it's starting to become something that's negotiated as part of costs of a property. Apart from the monthly net rental, if we're looking at just the rental, there are levies in an estate that apply to most people. Fewer and fewer people are in standalone properties. The levy in an estate is oftentimes higher than the rates and taxes of a property, whether or not the tenant pays for that or not. The levy now includes other costs. It's not just security and maintenance, but also access to the estate, maintenance, repairs. Whether you're in an estate or not, repairs and maintenance, it has to be something you budget. There's a lot of things, wear and tear, that you can't turn to the landlord for. Electricity fees. What I am seeing more of is the refuse costs and collection costs by city council to come and collect your rubbish, not the landlord's. So that is something that you've got to take into account. And if there are any additional services, you've got to get that information from the broker or the landlord. Are there any surcharge costs to run the generator or the solar power Often people are charging the rental of the solar system as a separate cost to the rental, as an additional fee. So yeah, there's a number of that. On the sales side, there's a number of costs as well, if you want to go through that.
We could go through that, but there's one or two questions coming through, and I think these are quite important. I'd like you to help our listeners with it. Compliance certificates. I think this is, I remember clearly when electrical compliance certificates came in, and they could be done by anybody, and then they got a lot more scrupulous as to how it had to be done. What certificates does a seller need to have in place these days in order for the sale to go through smoothly and for him or her to be compliant?
So in terms of compliance or clearance, the electrical compliance certificate is really, nothing can be done on the transfer process without that on the seller side. If we're looking at coastal towns, a BTOL certificate is also required that the seller needs to get written off or signed off. City of Joburg in Gauteng or in Johannesburg, or council clearance certificate is something that has to be done as well. It's not possible to transfer a property into a buyer's name until the seller has cleared off all arrears and debts plus 3 months in advance, but your transferring attorney would take care of that. So apart from that, it would be the council clearance certificate.
Somebody just asked an important question because I had a legal case with this not so long ago. They're asking about plans. How do I know that the property that I'm buying matches the plans that are registered at the city council?
That's, oh my gosh, yes. Another thing that's becoming quite common. You have to ask. You have to ask for approved plans. There is a way to, you know, walk into, let's speak about Johannesburg. One can walk into council head office in Bromfontein in the city, and with the correct property details on the City of Joburg statement, get and request at a fee the latest building plans. It's uncommon for a property practitioner to have that at hand, but it's really important. Every addition should have been passed by council. We are seeing more and more homes where the additions are touching the boundary wall and going higher than is legally allowed. But it's just a matter of requesting them. There is a nominal fee at council. You do have to wait a little bit longer to get that, but it's worthwhile. Approved plans.
Now, Eva, I'm sure a lot of people can agree with what I'm about to say, and I think it's worthwhile sharing. We had a scenario where a client claimed that he moved into a house in Cape Town. There were heavy rains, and the water came in from the patio into the dining room, warped the floors, and everything was destroyed, and he put in a claim. And the insurance company was just a little bit slow, the way I felt, in dealing with it. Comes up, they were just doing a little bit of research. The long and the short of it is that this homeowner had done renovations. According to the builder's recommendation, he had sloped the new patio down a little bit. He had cleared out a gully against the wall, put in perfect. What it came out was two important things. Number one, when they raised the patio and they redid it, there had to be a, I think it was a 60 centimeter gap between the patio and the door, like a step. And that was dropped to about 25. So that was the first warning bell. And the other one was, well, it's all good and well that you put in all these drains, but they're not regulation size. They're not the correct size. So the two together was, yes, the builder sort of gave the right advice. The homeowner followed it to the T, but together it didn't come to the party because the requirements by law were ignored, or they were sort of minimized. And that's why I think these things are so important. And it was just a painful case because the homeowner really did everything that he felt he was doing was right. The builder gave good advice, but didn't bother to look at the plans. And the damage was in the hundreds of thousands. So that's why I think it's so important. And you've made this point a few times in this chat, that it's important to take your time and go and do your homework. And even another thing that's coming up, and this is obviously a bit of a bugbear with people, is getting a mortgage bond. People saying here, Thomas is saying, I've been with a bank, and he mentions it, which I'm not going to mention, even though it has an emblem. Okay, forget about that. I've been with this bank for 35 years, and when I wanted a bond, I could only get the bond I needed at another bank. Why is that? So, Thomas, I don't know if Eva can answer that question, but I suppose different banks have different criteria that they look at.
That's as simple as it is. I mean, banks have different lending appetites, different criteria. In 1 week, I spoke to one national bank that is very generous and high risk in taking a lot of risk in financing commercial transactions for the next year. They understand the trends of what's coming. They know what may be coming in the next few months with the interest rates. A few days later, a different national bank has a different trajectory, appetite for risk. And it's not just about bank versus bank. It's also bank versus bank versus different regions in the country that have different risk profiles as provinces in the country to others. And I think it really is that simple. The bank that you've been loyal to for 35 years, check in with them every 24 months to see what they would pre-approve you on. With not just necessarily a mortgage, but anything, a credit card, a short-term loan, a student loan. And as competitive as they are, I think we should do the same from time to time just to test. I think we do that with our short-term insurance to some degree. Because we do deserve the best rates, the best offers for our loyalty. So shop around, no risk in that.
You are so correct there. I mean, something I've seen just in my own practice, how the rates in the short term change literally from month to month. And we are sometimes told, please go back to clients you quoted 3 months ago on these particular items because our risk outlook has changed. And you go back and it's almost more favorable. I remember the time where about 6 years ago, 7 years ago, when Maboneng at the bottom of town was all the rage, but you couldn't get bonds. Absa was the bank that really took the risk. And I often felt because they had a head office just up the road and they sort of breathed and they walked the talk in that area. They had like a grassroots understanding of where that investment was going. So, yes, I think that's so true. Going forward, one thing that people want to know is what are the telltale signs that an area is going to be solid going forward? I know you don't have a crystal ball, but if you talk about the areas that a lot of our Jewish listeners, for example, are in, when I was a kid, Q and that area was just magnificent. It was really, call it gardens, there were affordable homes with big gardens on the periphery, great views. Today, it's not a place that you would really want to bring your family up in, even though it borders Glen Hazel in some areas. Yeovil, Berea was just beautiful. It's no longer that. What are the trends that one should look out for?
Avi, I love that question. It's so subjective as it can be objective. And there's so many things that one can look at. I think for me, my default in being in real estate is to look at what are the development plans in the area. It's not hard to be connected to property developers, commercial property developers in the area to understand because they plan developments in an area 5 to 10 years out. Also, looking at the outskirts of the suburbs, who are the corporate companies that are either opening up in the area or closing down? Those decisions are made in a very calculated way years in advance, and there's reason for that. The reasons are road infrastructure, school, distribution of products and services. So residential development trends is a big one to look into, and you can pick that up from the media and just talking to the local community. And also the corporates that are either opening or closing down around and the activity of generally families and their decisions around the schools in the area. That's a big sign on what's happening. If I look at certain regions of the north of Joburg, a lot of decisions were made around the Gautrain route, and that determined that people were moving out of the suburbs because they don't want to be on, you know, having underground explosions while we're building trains. But at the same time, it was favorable in terms of routes to the Lancera airport. So it look at the bigger corporate activity in the area. That tells you where things will be for the next 10 years.
I mean, that's such an interesting point. I know the area that I once we got married and brought our children up, there was the last Afrikaans school called Durkie Ace in the area. And there were Afrikaans speaking people in the area because of the school. But as the country moved on, that school moved to be predominantly a school for children from Soweto and Alex. And it's interesting because the parents and the families didn't move into the area, but yet it became a school because of the quality of the education, serviced the greatest community. So it didn't really follow the norm as such, but that is really the point. Eva, we need to start wrapping up. And one thing that we know that South African residential property has been through a really big challenge. One of the things that I know would really upset me deeply is when I would walk on a Saturday through the Jewish area, you know, again, I said, all the way from Houghton to other side of Ken Hazel, and you know, friends have just bought a house or something, and then the person next door, all of a sudden you see them throwing concrete plinth, and next thing in their garden, they've got a row of rooms that are going up, and you just know they're going to rent out each one of those rooms. There's definitely no plans. The council's going to turn a blind eye. That is blockbusting at its essential core. That is just overpopulating an area and sort of taking advantage of people who are so desperate for accommodation that they're prepared to do that. And there's not much that one can do about that. So on the one side, there's this emotional plight that we understand the desperate situation and the advantage that these people get taken off. But on the other hand, if we don't stick to zoning rules strictly and we don't adhere to them, then eventually everything just becomes slum. And, you know, you've got to be cruel to be kind sometimes. And if you see your neighbor doing something that just seems out incorrect, am I right, Eva, that you have a right to say, what are you doing? Where your council approval? Because this affects my property value.
I think you're 100% right. And it's more than just be cool to be kind or tough love. I think it's a responsibility of any community member to do the hard thing, to keep things in integrity with the way it's supposed to. There are rules for a reason, and that needs to be honored. And the knock-on effect of that is huge. It changes the desirability of investing in the area. It changes pollution of all types. It changes security of an area. And it's more than just tough love. I think it's our duty and responsibility. And while a lot of a lot of people will turn a blind eye in certain instances, even that is not a reason to stop. I find myself finding a lot of power in numbers. So in my immediate community, we've all become good friends, we've all become allies, we've all become neighborly. And when there's something that we need to take action against, we do it as a group. You know, people not respecting the noise bylaws, et cetera, et cetera. I think just keep going until you support your neighbor in honoring the integrity of the rules. It has to be done.
Eva, it's been absolutely fascinating chatting to you. How do people get hold of you? How do people reach you?
Well, thank you, Abby, for asking. It's been an honor chatting to you. I've actually learned so much from you, which is great. Century21.co.za, Eva August. We've got a website. We're nationally based. And that's it. Easy to reach out and connect. Social media as well. Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
Great. Thank you. And it should be a lot of fun buying a property. There will be stress. But if you have the right person, professional, holding your hand, you won't fall between the cracks and you will go through the process. It's not going to be a walk in the park, but at least you'll be supported. Eva August, thank you so much for your time. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. Craig, I just want to take this opportunity once again to thank you and to wish you and your family a Chag Kasher v'Sameach, a kosher and happy Passover, and to all our listeners, thank you so much. We'll chat to you in 2 weeks.